This is Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WHYY and WNYC. I'm Nancy Solomon. Just as New Jersey gets control of the COVID pandemic, a huge swath of the country is seeing the kind of outbreak we had at our peak in April. We'll talk about whether New Jersey can reopen for business and send children back to school if the pandemic is raging outside our borders. Teachers and parents, do you have a question for the governor about reopening schools in September? Call in at 844-677-9283. Or maybe you're a business owner struggling to stay afloat. We want to hear from you. The number again is 844-677-9283. We'll also be taking your calls via social media using the hashtag AskGovMurphy. We have the governor on the line. How are you, and how's your family holding up?
We're holding up well. It's great to be back with you. You know, we're doing well. I mean, this is a year that none of us will ever forget.
That's for sure.
That's for sure, right? And yeah. Whether it's school, as you just mentioned, or work, or the inequities and the stain of racism, the enormous loss of life, everywhere you turn, there are challenges in many respects unlike we've ever faced before.
Right. Before we jump into managing the pandemic in New Jersey, I thought we'd start first with some of the national news that just it keeps coming every day, day in and day out. So today was, of course, the memorial for civil rights leader and Congressman John Lewis. And we had Presidents Obama, Clinton, and Bush all speaking. President Trump was notably absent and instead tweeted that he wants to delay the presidential election. Now, Lewis, of course, devoted his life to voting rights. So I thought, how can we start the show without talking about what do you make of President Trump's antipathy towards vote by mail?
Yeah, I don't think it's founded in the facts, Nancy. But before I answer that, I want to say John Lewis is an American hero. I had the honor of watching some of the eulogies today, including the one by President Obama. I had the bigger honor of hosting John Lewis in Berlin when I was the U.S. ambassador to Germany, and it was one of the most incredible evenings of my family's life. And so God bless him, God bless his soul, and thank God for all that he did to blaze a trail for so many. I think that this notion of there's some deficiencies that are broad-based in vote by mail is if not completely, overwhelmingly unfounded. And I think it's important to say that. You and I talked about this. We moved our primary in New Jersey from June 2nd to July 7th, and we did a hybrid election, meaning everyone who was registered at a party automatically got a ballot. If you were unregistered, you got an application for a ballot. And then in addition to that, each county committed to 50% capacity in-person voting on the election day and at least one location per municipality. The early returns are overwhelmingly positive. That's not to say everything was perfect, but overwhelmingly positive. Turnout was very robust relative to any other period. We learned some lessons. I'm not sure that's the exact model that we'll pursue for the November election, but I think this is largely, Nancy, trying to scare people away from a way to both exercise that sacred right of democracy, which is voting, on the one hand, and protecting your health and public health at the same time on the other hand. I think it's unfounded, and I believe increasingly the data and the experiences, not just in New Jersey but around the country, prove that point.
And is this coming from a fear that he has that it'll favor Democratic voters?
I can't speak obviously for the president, I think he'd have to speak for himself on that. But I will say this: the more we open up democracy, whether it's the ability to vote by mail, early voting, which I would love, online registration, some of the things we've already done, and I'm proud that we've done toward ex-offenders, whatever it might be to open up democracy in a responsible way, in a way that we can monitor appropriately, is good, I believe, for everybody, regardless of what party you're in, regardless who you are as a candidate. It's good for democracy. It's good for New Jersey. It's good for America.
Listeners, if you have a question for the governor, give us a call at 844-677-9283. We're also taking your questions on social if you tweet us with the hashtag AskGovMurphy. And let's go to Joe Hernandez of WHYY, who is monitoring our social feed. What have you got for us, Joe?
Hey, Nancy. Yeah, we're getting a lot of questions about education. Here are two from two teachers. The first is from Cheryl in Manahawkin. She says, if adults have to wear masks to protect students, as you've required, Governor, what about the safety of employees since you do not require students to wear masks to protect adults? And Nina in Wayne says, how can you reopen schools when we can't even trust adults to eat indoors? I'm in a classroom with no air conditioning, no ventilation, and the windows do not open.
Joe, good to hear your voice. This is probably the most important topic, I think, on people's minds other than the enormous toll that we've paid as a state and the progress we've made. And I also want to, Nancy, make sure at some point tonight that we get a chance to talk about the here and now and what our numbers look like and what concerns us. So let me start with the following. Anyone who expects that this will be a normal school year is going to be disappointed. This will not be normal. No matter where we come out, where local districts come out, it's going to be a challenge for everybody. So I think we need to acknowledge that up front. And I also want to say commend everyone, including overwhelmingly educators, superintendents, other administrators, parents, kids, commend everybody who's working hard to work out a path forward. Secondly, I would say we want to provide as much flexibility as humanly possible for parents, educators, districts, kids. We made an announcement last week, for instance, that we're going to be able to deliver devices as well as internet connectivity to the kids, many thousands of kids in our state who do not at this moment have that. That's not something that we were able to do. We've been able now to find the money. We'll be able to deliver on that promise. That allows us to make the further announcement that if folks want to exercise the option to remote learn, we are accepting of that. As the districts put their plans together, that's an option that we support because we know we'll be able to close the digital divide. It's a huge step, unlike almost any other American state that we've been able to make over the past couple of months. And just as we close schools, we ask districts to submit their plans. They're now finishing off and polishing off, similarly, their plans to reopen. We put out, I think, a 105-page set of parameters and guidelines a few weeks ago. I would say, Nancy, the print, I won't go over all 105 pages, mercifully, but they're guided basically by three principles. One is the health and safety of students, their families, clearly educators and staff. Secondly, how best to educate all of our children. And thirdly, equity. And this is a point and an element here that gets too little discussed. Equity, in particular, for families that depend more heavily on in-person education. Those are the broad parameters and principles and values that guide us. The districts are working through their plans. There's an overwhelming amount of evidence that in-person education is far more enriching for our kids than remote, but we need to do that responsibly. So to Cheryl, I support personally everybody who's indoors unless they can't for some physical reason or they're under the age of two or there's a particular exercise going on or maybe they're eating their lunch. I support face coverings for everybody. And I would say to Nina, and these are both, listen, to Cheryl and Nina, educators are at the top of the, on the pedestal as far as I'm concerned. So the concerns and questions are rightful. I would say on indoor dining, and ventilation, she raises in her question, that does matter, and that's an important point. By definition, though, if you're indoor dining or you're inside at a bar, your mask is off because you're eating or drinking. And I've already mentioned a second ago that I feel strongly that face coverings are a big difference maker, and that if folks are face covering, social distancing, capacity is managed. One of the benefits of remote learning is that if kids take that option and their families take that option, you lower the capacity in the classroom, and I know that's a big ask and concern of educators. And listen, this is not easy. This is a hard one. This is as hard as any step we've taken. It's complex. It's not normal. But I believe we could take it responsibly together. And Nancy, one last point on equity. That point I mentioned a minute ago, it gets too little discussed. You know, not every family has the extra room. Not only family has multiple devices or can afford a tutor. Not every family can afford to have one parent at home while the other parent works and earns for the family. You know, we have a lot of families who don't check any of those boxes, and therefore their dependence on in-person education is overwhelming. There's really no plan B. And so for all those reasons, we want to get there together, safely, responsibly.
Let's stay with the issue of reopening schools. We have a call for you. Stephen in Haddon Heights, you're on the line with the governor.
Hello. Thank you so much for taking my call, Governor Murphy and WHYY.
Hey,
I want to first just thank Governor Murphy for just making New Jersey schools such a high priority in the state and some of the best in the country. As a New Jersey teacher, I really, really appreciate your commitment. My question is regarding the stress and mental health of students in New Jersey. So as we return to this kind of new, strange, distance environment, you know, how can we work together with students and the community to make sure that our students feel safe and feel good at school and then coming home? You know, there, I guess I have concerns about students being afraid of catching the virus and then bringing it home to their family members, and I'm sure that this fear also extends to other staff members in different districts across the school.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, Stephen, listen, bless you, and thank you for being an educator, most importantly. My sister, who's a retired Boston City school teacher, would want me to make sure I said that. None of this is easy. The mental health piece is very important. I participated in a Zoom call yesterday with the superintendent and senior staff and other interested parties in Delran Township in Burlington County. By the way, I want to give them a shout out. I think they really had thought through a lot of these challenges really well, and mental health was a big part of that discussion. And you've had, and again, I'm not a medical expert or a mental health expert, but many, many, if not scores or hundreds of experts have written about the mental health impact of what we've just gone through, what we're still going through, the COVID experience generally, the remote learning, staying at home, lack of social interaction, et cetera. And so that's a huge mental health challenge. We know that. We know the reporting of, sadly, of child abuse, domestic violence is way down, not because the incidences are down, but because kids are not coming in contact with the folks they're normally coming in contact with, teachers, nurses, coaches, law enforcement. So that's got a huge mental health burden. And there's no doubt, to Stephen's question, there's mental health challenges and stress and anxiety about getting back to school. And then you weigh against that, obviously, the physical health realities, the educational imperatives. So getting this right is incredibly important. And so I know districts are doing this already. In our 105-page guidance, we hit this very hard from our Department of Education, Department of Health. Mental health considerations have to be center stage in this. It's not just physical health. It's mental health. And that includes the burden and challenges we face with kids learning remotely from home.
Okay, so we have another call on schools. We'll stay with schools just a little bit longer. We have Doug from Ewing on the line. Doug?
Yes.
Go ahead, Doug, with your question. It was supposed to be about school lunches. I have a question.
Without knowing the question, Nancy, one challenge we have with indoor eating in indoor dining, including kids in cafeterias, is you got to, it's an obvious point, but you got to take your mask off to eat or drink your milk or your water, whatever it is. I would just say even more generally, we're part of a regional group of seven states that have more than one interactions a week. These are experts. We look at the national reality. We look at international examples, Denmark, Germany, others. I would say two things. We're blessed in our state. Every loss of life is awful, and we've lost two blessed souls under the age of 18, each with significant comorbidities. But if you were to look at that out of the out of the over 15,000 both confirmed and probable losses of life, you could draw the conclusion, well, that's a very modest toll, as awful as it is to lose both of those precious lives. On the other hand, there is enormous uncertainty, and this is why these questions are fair and why we've got to do that. We have to do this, but we can do it responsibly. There's enormous uncertainty among any experts about the asymptomatic, the reality of the asymptomatic healthy young person unwittingly passing the virus to a older person, someone with comorbidities, which makes this, no one has the crisp answer on that, which makes all these questions and all these challenges as significant as they are. But we do know, if we could do it responsibly and safely, giving kids a dose of interpersonal experience with their peers, with educators, if we can do that, that's something that we without question want to be able to do.
You know, here we are 4 months after you shut down the state, and we have a COVID infection rate that is low enough to allow us to start opening up. But, you know, my concern is now we have all these other states that either refused to shut down or reopened against the advice of public health experts, where we're seeing horrible outbreaks that are really much like the one we've already weathered. What kind of impact is the, you know, what's happening nationally? How does that affect your thinking and the data and the benchmarks you're looking at for whether kids can go back to school, whether we can eat at restaurants indoors?
I'm only asking this half-jokingly. How much time do I have?
It's a good question. You have about a minute and a half.
Okay, I think I'm going to start, but can we come back to this? Is that possible?
Sure.
So, Nancy, the numbers are dramatically better. They're not easy, by the way, but you all know the curves have gone to a very much better place. But we've lost, again, confirmed 13,934 lives in New Jersey and another almost 2,000, which we think are probable. Just think about that. Having said that, thanks to the enormously responsible behavior of millions of New Jerseyans, we've gotten to a better place. Having said that, the numbers of late, the anecdotal evidence of late, has begun to concern us. I want to get to indoor dining as much as anybody, but the numbers, both in our state and to your question, which I'd love to come back to after the commercial, what we're seeing elsewhere in the country have really taken us to pause this. And I would love to, when we come back, to give a little bit more color on that.
Okay. And so we will be back with the governor. You're listening to Ask Governor Murphy, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WNYC and WHYY. Got a question for the governor? Call us at 844-677-9283 or send us your questions on Twitter or Facebook with the hashtag AskGovMurphy.
I'm Nancy Solomon. We're live with Governor Phil Murphy. So let's return as I promised we would. So you're seeing an uptick in cases over the last week. Is that right?
We are. Let me give you, Nance, we are. Today's a little bit better. Inside of our four walls of New Jersey, we knew, and frankly inside of our region, because our region is in the best shape of any region in the country, not without an enormous toll. We knew as we opened up step by step, we would take on more risk and expect that the rate of transmission would creep up, and the rate of how many tests or what percentage of tests are positive, spot positivity, would increase. We expected and accepted that. What we did not expect, enormous flare-ups in other states. Why is that relevant? It's relevant because, number one, it stretched the testing supplies, so the turnaround time on testing has been stretched out after weeks, if not months, of building up the highest per capita testing capacity of any American state. So we've got to get that back to where it needs to be. Secondly, travel from these other states, which is why we put a travel advisory out and asking folks to self-quarantine and get tested. And thirdly, an overwhelming amount of evidence that the infections in places like Florida, Arizona, Texas, parts of California, other places, were coming from indoor activities. So when you combine all of that, that was a huge cautionary trend and aha moment. It's been exacerbated, and I would be remiss if I didn't comment on behavior inside of New Jersey, which has nothing, we believe, to do with other states, and that is mostly young people, not only, but mostly, congregating indoors, lacking in ventilation, on top of each other, no face coverings, sedentary for long periods of time. We've seen house parties in Middletown, where we live, Long Beach Island, Jackson, other examples up and down the state. Folks can't do that. It's okay to get together. Please wear a face covering. Please social distance, but do it outside and do it with reasonable numbers. And if you do that, we'll be okay. But if we keep having these indoor parties, and that's added on top of what we're seeing flaring up around the country, and folks potentially coming back into New Jersey, we're asking for trouble. And that, to me, is our biggest challenge right now.
But given what you just said, it seems to support all the more the position of teachers all over the state who don't want to return to indoor classrooms. So,
not necessarily, because, and again, this is going to be, no two districts are alike. So what you do, I'm just going to, broadly speaking, what we do, what a district chooses to put in place as a plan in a very rural community versus a very urban community, with both different realities of the actual physical plant and different realities of the kids who go to the school and their living realities and mom and dad needing to go to work, et cetera. Those are, I'm picking extremes here, but no two districts are alike. So, but there's a huge emphasis on capacity management, social distancing, face coverings, hyper hygiene, get outside when you can. We've now offered the flexibility of remote learning, potentially look at a hybrid model. So I hope that the folks realize that we've provided the whole range a wide enough set of latitude. And again, the three principles are health and education quality and equity. And those are the three things we're going to continue to, that will continue to guide us.
Okay, we're going to return to the phones because we have a teacher who's called in. Lisa in Point Pleasant, you're on the line with the governor.
Hi, Governor. I also have
Lisa.
To ditto that you have been doing an amazing job with New Jersey. However, I am a teacher, and I have two small children, a 5- and 7-year-old. And
bless you.
Thanks. And you have been talking about giving flexibility to districts, but the problem is that the teachers are getting no flexibility. So I am being put back into my classroom 5 days a week, even on the day that is supposed to be remote and deep clean should be taking place, but instead I'm going to be corralled back into my school on a day when no kids will be there. Yet many districts in my area are only offering K through fourth grade 2 days a week. So, like many teachers who live in New Jersey, especially in Ocean County and the southern counties that do not get paid the same amount as maybe North, but, you know, who cannot afford childcare normally and rely mm-hmm. on our parents, our grandparents over the age of 60, mine are 72 and 73, and they are
bless
not
them dead. As well.
But how are we going to address the childcare situation that is going to occur because there are no daycares and child care, yet my two 5- and 7-year-olds are expected to be home learning when both parents have to be at work?
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things I said earlier. That's a legitimate challenge. I don't know the specifics of the Point Pleasant plan, but Lisa, one thing I want to say, our whole cabinet and team are listening. I'm going to have somebody on our team get to you within the next 24 hours because I'd like to understand the exact sort of the specifics around there, your district's plan. So I'll get either Kevin Diemer, who's the acting commissioner, or one of his folks to follow up with you. We have allowed for daycare, so that's one thing that we did do. There was a period of time, and Nancy, you'll remember we spoke about this, where daycare went for essential workers only, and then we've opened that option back up. And that's an important point, and Lisa made it. I was thinking of it through the lens of the parents of the kid in school. Lisa reminds me that many of those parents of kids in school are teachers themselves, and she's one of them. And so we have opened daycare back up, and that doesn't address, in all fairness to Lisa's point about pay equity, doesn't necessarily address that it's affordable, but it is there as an option. But again, we want to, the order of events here is health and safety, education quality, and equity. And we respect all issues. There's enormous passion around this question. This is as complex a reality, opening schools, as any we've dealt with, and that's saying something because we've had to deal with some incredible complexities. But Lisa, we're going to follow up with you. And someone will get you, I promise you, within the next 24 hours and just go through it so I can understand it a little bit better.
And Governor, I'm not sure if Lisa's still on the line with us or not. I think she is there. I'm curious if you're more concerned not about the cost of child care, but of the health exposure.
My concern is that my grandparents are going to end up watching my children out of desperation, and then we are going to see an influx in the state of New Jersey of people over the age of 60 who are grandparents to kids whose parents are teachers, because at the end of the day, my children have not stepped into a public building since before COVID, and I could not put them into a daycare, especially because there's nobody there who's going to be able to teach them. My one child is not typically developing, and my other child is, but they both need, they're going to be expected to be on at 8, on in the morning doing Zoom, which I still can't accept that elementary school kids are allowed to not.
Yep.
I really believe that, so that's my concern. My concern is
tell me, in a perfect world, from your perspective, what's the model that works best for you?
Okay, so it's not about me. it's about our community. It's about our state and the fact that we've been doing so well. And I have spent so much time looking at all the models, and I have seen such an equity between the districts. To me, I love the roadmap, but the roadmap is a guideline. But how you did it in age bands, where you had encourage districts to look at the age bands and the needs. And what I'm seeing is we are not looking at the needs. It's getting one size fits all, so first graders are being treated like 12th graders, and I would love it if it was elementary school kids have to be in school. You cannot have an economy if they are not, there's not care for them, and they also need it for educational reasons. Those kids haven't learned how to read and write.
Get elementary in,
middle school something, and then high school. You know, other countries are not bringing in high school. Not even Sweden doesn't even have high school kids in.
Sweden, though, isn't necessarily a great model for us. But I'm largely in agreement with you on the young kids. But I need to understand, which we'll get our team to follow up with you on your particular district, because I've seen enough of the plans, or at least the evolution of the plans as they stand, and there is not really a one-size-fits-all here. For instance, I mentioned Delran. There was a very rich discussion about elementary versus middle school versus high school. So, I we encourage, as you noted in our road back, we encourage strongly that folks think about the different realities with kids at different levels of their development and education. So again, Lisa, I'm going to have someone on our team follow up with you. I completely get your points. I respect them, and just need to know more about exactly what's going on, both where your kids are going to school and where you're teaching.
You're listening to Ask Governor Murphy. I'm Nancy Solomon. We'd like to hear from you. If you have a question to ask the governor, it's 844-677-9283. You can tweet your questions using the hashtag AskGovMurphy. And we do have another question from social. Joe Hernandez, what do you have for us?
Yeah, here's a question from Patty in Maple Shade. Patty says, I'm a waitress and was very disappointed to hear that all indoor dining had been suspended until further notice. Will restaurant workers be helped out financially?
Please God, yes, Patty, but I can't say specifically what your situation is. I'm going to ask our labor commissioner, Rob Acero Angelo, or one of his senior folks, Patty, to call you and Maple Shade is one of New Jersey's great communities, by the way. So listen, I mentioned this earlier. I would love nothing more than to get to indoor dining. But the experience we are seeing unquestionably around the country tells us that that's a very fragile step to take, particularly while the virus is still among us. You know, I'll just read folks to remind that we're not out of the woods. Again, we've gotten a lot better, but this today we announced 261 positive cases, but the past few days, 489, 565, 446, 512, 547, you know, that's several thousand cases this week alone. So, again, I want to get there. Believe me, my guess is, Patty, we get to indoor dining seated at the table with bar service only, waiter or waitress bringing it to the table, social distancing, capacity management, face coverings, et cetera, before we get to bars. Bar congregation clearly feels like it's a much harder step to take. It's a public health crisis unlike any other. It's an economic crisis unlike any other, and no segment of our industry has been crushed more or employees crushed more than hospitality and restaurants. We have had, just to put a fine point on this, 1.44 million people in our state have filed for unemployment claims, including 28,000 last week, which is an increase of $2,200 people over the week before. We have put $12.2 billion to people already, split between the feds and ourselves. 96% of the people who are monetary eligible have gotten at least one payment. That's all great, but if I'm looking at through Patty's lens, and I'm not one of them, and I'm frustrated that I'm not one of them, I don't blame you. It turns out how folks are treated in the unemployment insurance reality is very specific to the individual, which is why I want our commissioner to follow up with Patty. I worry, by the way, Nancy, that the feds are not going to extend benefits and that there'll be a whole lot of people by the millions, not just in New Jersey, but around the country, who are left holding the bag. You know, we'll do as much as we can for folks who have lost their job, for small businesses. We've committed over $100 million, but there's only so much any state can do. We need the feds. They play an existential role. We need Congress and the president to put out another big slug of relief for people, for businesses, for states themselves.
Okay, well, we actually have a caller exactly on this topic, so let's go to that call. We have Jeff from Sayreville. You're on the line with the governor.
Yes, hello, Governor. Thank you for taking my call.
Hey, Jeff.
Hello, Governor. Okay, reason for my calling is out of, obviously, desperation, just the subject you're talking about, and I'm speaking on behalf of my son, who is, you know, a good kid, a good employee, goes to college. He worked in a corporate restaurant in Menlo Park Mall. And, you know, because of the pandemic, the restaurant's closed down. He's filed months and months ago, 4 months ago. And, yep. You know, he's getting a status that it's filed, but there's no one to speak with. There's no one, no correspondence. No one is sending emails, letters, or you call the agency. It's busy from morning till night. There's no one to speak with, and I mean, it's just out of desperation, and you know, we don't know what else to do here, and we just, as you were saying, hopefully maybe you can have someone follow up with me or
Jeff, what's your son's name? Is he over 21?
Yes, he is. He's a college.
What's his name?
His name is Jeffrey, Jeffrey Pelley,
right.
Pellei.
Okay. Okay, but Governor, there are so many people. We've gotten tons of questions about unemployment claims and the long wait, the people not getting their checks, not getting able to process their claims. So address this for everybody, even though I understand you'll follow up with this particular.
No, we will. But there's both a general answer to this, and that doesn't make Jeff, you or your son Jeffrey, feel any better, by the way. If he's not getting his money and he's desperate about that and you're desperate, I don't blame you. You have every right to be. And I will make, by the way, I was with some Sayreville friends just before I got on this call, so hats, shout out to Sayreville. I want to, Rob Angelo, our commissioner, Jeff will come to you or your son Jeffrey, I'm not sure which makes the most sense, but we'll get to one of you guys within the next 24 hours. So we have a tsunami of folks who are unemployed. We've never had 1.44 million people in our state unemployed. Folks, and again, this is not to make Jeff feel any better. This is just I want to make sure folks understand the context. The only period that this economic meltdown and the unemployment reality compares in our state's history only to two other periods, the Great Depression of the 30s and the Civil War. So you know when you're comparing it to that, this is an extreme situation that unlike anything we've ever dealt with before. So it's a tsunami of folks who are unemployed. As I said, Rob Angelo and his team have fought through this. Folks have exercised enormous amount of patience, and I want to thank everybody for that. And Nancy, they've delivered, of the 1.44 claimants, they've delivered at least one payment to 96% of the people who were monetarily eligible for that. Here's the other fact, though, and this has been the case, I think, probably now for 3 months. Virtually every single one of the outstanding situations, and Jeffrey, I don't know his situation, and I promise you we'll follow up, have a very particular reason to that individual's case, which has held up the payment. At one point it was gig economy workers. There's a big challenge when you've got, it doesn't sound like it's Jeffrey's issue, when you've got multiple state, you know, you live in New Jersey, you work in New York, or vice versa, but they turn out to be very specific to the individual. So as much as I'm proud of how much we've chopped through this, we're committed to chopping through not just most of folks, not just 96%. We want to get to 100% as fast as we can. And Jeff, I promise you, we will follow up with you and your son within the next 24 hours.
Okay, thank you, Governor. We're going to take a quick break and be back with more of your questions. You're listening to Ask Governor Murphy.
You're listening to Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WNYC and WHYY. Got a question for the governor? Call us at 844-677-9283 or send us your questions on Twitter or Facebook with the hashtag AskGovMurphy.
I'm Nancy Solomon. We're live with Governor Phil Murphy taking your questions. And as we load up the calls to get ready for you, let me ask a quick one of you.
Please.
Governor, the legislature passed a bill today that will continue a tax on health insurance companies that was part of Obamacare. The federal fee sunsets, as I understand it, next January. And if the state picks up that fee, it can raise the money to lower the cost of insurance in the state without really raising the cost on health insurers who are already paying that fee. So if I explained it correctly and you agree that you don't need to brush up on my explanation, do you plan on signing the bill?
Yeah, I don't normally get out on a bill that has just been voted on, but we are an enthusiastic supporter of that bill. So unless there's anything that happened at the last minute that I'm not aware of, this is a big one. And Nancy, I commend you for explaining it right on the money. There's a federal stipend that's associated with Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act that will sunset, and this is to replace that. It's a little bit higher than the federal piece, but only a little bit. Some of it, technical point, will go into sort of reinsurance to keep the rates as competitive for everybody. But the big slug of the proceeds, by the way, this used to be, is that the big shift here is, particularly in this administration in Washington, they have tried to dismember the Affordable Care Act. They have collected all the money. They've dictated all the terms. We have now taken a whole series of steps to prop up the Affordable Care Act. Our principle is a simple one. Health care is a right, not a privilege. This is yet another step in that direction. So we'll take a big slug of the proceeds from this fee, and we will deliver it to the very families, and I hope as well small businesses, who right now cannot afford health care. So these are folks below some measure of poverty, and I hope, as I said, to be able to have enough money to get to the small businesses that can't afford to give medical benefits, health insurance to their employees. So we talk right now about this moment in our country. the aftermath of the killing of George Floyd, the stain of racism, the enormous inequities. As we say many times, COVID-19 didn't create the inequities, but it laid them bare. So words do matter, and that's why the words of the three presidents who spoke today and the other eulogists were so important in John Lewis's funeral. But actions have got to follow those words, and today is literally one of those days where we put our money where our mouth is.
Okay, we're going to go to the call. Back to the calls, we have Jane in Hudson County who wants to join the conversation. Hi, Jane.
Hi, hey, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
And Governor, thanks for doing everything you're doing to try and keep us all very safe. I have a situation. I have a corporate landlord, so not a mom-and-pop folks. These are very wealthy people. They have a federally backed mortgage on the building, on the property, and they filed court papers for back rent in civil court, not in housing court. Isn't this sidestepping your executive order against eviction moratoriums? And I just don't understand how it can be allowed for corporate landlords to sue New Jersey citizens when they have lawyers on retainers and we're just average working people.
Yeah, I mean, Jane, that doesn't... I'm not a lawyer, but I don't like the smell of what you've just described. So, again, this is something I'm going to have somebody in my team follow up with you, because I don't like to hear that. From the moment this whole crisis took hold, we have been doing everything we can to be on the side of the folks who are renting or paying a mortgage. You know, I get asked a lot as the first of the month approaches this weekend. I want to get a chance to say this, that our eviction and foreclosure moratoriums remain in place, period. And that means nobody can be removed, whether you're a tenant or a homeowner, from your place as a result of an eviction or a foreclosure proceeding, including anything that folks may be doing a PQ with it. So, and by the way, that moratorium lasts for as much as 2 months after we declare the end of the health emergency. We've, through the Department of Community Affairs, we've put out, I think, $100 million in short-term rental assistance for low and moderate income families. The demand for that, as you can imagine, is overwhelming. And I would say, looking ahead, we know that renters and homeowners are going to need flexibility to pay back, whether it's months of rent or mortgage payments, when this moratorium lifts, and we're going to need a law for that. So we want to work with our legislative partners to find a solution, and that's one that I guarantee you will also sign if it gets here. In the meantime, I got to get somebody to follow up on the details of what you've described, Jane. But if someone's trying to get around our executive order, we will not treat that kindly. So I think it's probably going to be someone from our tremendous Attorney General Grabeer Graywall's office, and ask them to follow up with you. But I wanted to make sure you knew the value sort of parameters that we put on making sure folks in their deepest, darkest hour of need are being dealt with respect, and that people aren't playing games with them.
Governor, let me ask a follow-up. So the moratorium will last for 2 months after the state of emergency ends. And, you know, housing advocates are predicting a really dire situation. You know, one report said 300,000 people in New Jersey, once the moratorium lifts, will be evicted. So what are you thinking about specifically about that moment in time when the moratorium is lifted and we could be facing a humanitarian crisis, really?
Yep. No question. So we're working. We need legislative we need statutory steps to be taken. We've had generally good relations with the legislature, and we're in a good moment as we evolve legislation that we're going to need for this. Nancy, I'm going to use a phrase that dates me, but I think folks should look to, whether it's rental payments or mortgage payments, something akin to layaway plans, that folks are allowed some humane ability over a significant amount of time to get whole again. The thing that we can't, not only to Jane's question, that we can't tolerate is somebody being cute and working around the system, if in fact that's the case, and again, we need to understand the specifics, or a mortgage bank or a landlord demanding on moment one after the the moratorium ends, all of the, not just that month's payment, but also the months in arrears. And so we're working with the legislature to try to have some sort of a smoothing out period relating somewhat to how many months are we dealing with. And therefore, say a model might be you're behind a month. Well, you're going to get 6 months to pay to make yourself whole against that month, something like that. More on that as it evolves.
Okay, let's stay with this issue. We've got another call about evictions. Alok in South Brunswick, you're on the line with the governor.
Hey, Alok.
Hello, Governor. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Governor, whatever you were discussing, there's another aspect to that. And there's a collateral damage happening for the mom-and-pop small homeowners who are renting. I am a homeowner. I am renting to a tenant. I have been really, really nice to them. I have been passionate with them. I gave last year, September, they owed me about $17,000. I went to the court, worked a plan with them for, gave them 6 months to pay me back. In March, they stopped, in January, they stopped paying rent. Not only the back rent, but rent. I got a warrant of removal on 15th of March, but unfortunately, COVID happened and your order stopped eviction. Now, my question is, what can you do for the small homeowners who are losing money left and right because of this? And for the tenants who are not, I understand for the tenants who are losing their job because of COVID, this is a good law. But there are tenants who are just misusing your law.
Misusing
your...
Yeah.
And what can you do for me? I'm 50,000 down because of this, and a tenant is enjoying rent-free living for another year.
Yep.
What
so, Alok, again, we're going to need to. I'm not making light of your challenge, and I have enormous sympathy. But without knowing the specifics, I'm going to give just a quick general answer. But I will say this, Alok, and my colleague Dan Bryan will make sure he figures out the right person to follow up with you. We will get to you within the next 24 hours. I promise you, we always do, and understand the specifics of your situation. One of the principles, the general answer, without knowing the specifics of Alok's circumstances, South Brunswick, is one of the general principles, Nancy, has been symmetry. So if you are a landlord, or whether that's an office or it's a home, whatever it might be, and you yourself have a mortgage, we wanted from moment one to see symmetry. We wanted if the mortgage banks agreed to a holiday, which they did, we expected therefore the landlord or the homeowner who had that mortgage to pass that on essentially with a holiday, a like holiday, to the tenant. That's been a guiding principle, and obviously anyone who takes advantage of the system needs to be dealt with, so I can't speak to whether there's bad acting here. We'd have to know more of the details, but that notion of symmetry has guided us throughout this and will continue to.
Okay, thank you, Governor. This is Ask Governor Murphy. I'm Nancy Solomon. Call us with your questions at 844-677-9283 or tweet at us using the hashtag AskGovMurphy, and we'll take another call question from social. Joe Hernandez, what have you got?
Yeah, here's one from Arlen in Princeton. Arlen says, when do you anticipate that residents of assisted living and long-term care facilities will be able to have in-person interactions with visitors, and what form are they likely to take? Being able to sit outside or take walks together would help address the loneliness and associated mental health issues that many are suffering.
Yeah. Joe, before I answer, is it Arlen?
Arlen, yep.
Arlen. Before I answer Arlen's question, my folks have confirmed that nothing happened related to the health care bill that you asked me about, Nancy, at the end. So I will be signing that tomorrow, definitively. And it's a huge step toward an enormous inequity that exists in our state, in this case, as it relates to health insurance and access to health care.
And that would be about $225 million into the state budget?
I think it's closer to $300 million, but it's all dedicated explicitly to healthcare. So that's going to be money that will stay inside the healthcare box.
Okay.
Unlike so many steps that have been taken in New Jersey over time, fees and taxes, where you thought it was going for one thing and went for another, this will stay within the healthcare reality and overwhelmingly address affordability.
Okay, so nursing homes.
Arlen, I'm a little bit, and I'm going to have either our fabulous Judy Persichelli, our health commissioner, or one of her people follow up with Arlen. We had begun, I believe, in mid-June, just prior to Father's Day, to allow outdoor engagement with residents of long-term care facilities, and I want to make sure that she concurs with that. You know, we mentioned mental health with the kids, and that's real, and mental health with folks living in long-term care facilities, whether they be, in Arlen's case, assisted living that Arlen's asking about, a nursing home, homes for developmentally disabled, or psychiatric hospitals, whatever it might be. But the isolation, the lack of interaction, has been devastating. We talk about the loss of life and the devastating toll, but there's overwhelming evidence that the mental health stress in our state, and by the way, in our country, if not the world, has also been overwhelming. And getting people to be able to safely and responsibly engage and visit again has been a huge objective. And Arlen, I'll make sure we follow up with exactly what the rules of the road are right now.
Okay, we're going to try to squeeze in a few more calls. We have Sarah from Manahawkin on the line.
Hi, how are you?
Hi,
hello,
Sarah.
How are you?
Thank you.
You sound from New Jersey.
Thank you.
So I'm a licensed dental hygienist of 24 years in the state of New Jersey, and I have some significant public health concerns related to our field. You know, we've heard a lot of emphasis on teachers, risks, essential workers, but there's been really very little focus on the dental health profession.
Yep.
And I have concerns about that for two reasons. We've been back seeing routine patients since the third week of May, May 26th. And I truly feel that it's a public health concern, as there's generally no legal governing statute that prevents dental offices from running without any adequate aerosol management. So here we are in the highest risk occupation, indoors, seeing patients, back-to-back, 30 to 60-minute appointments. They're not being spaced out. There's nothing regulating that. There's nothing mandating that they have to use something to control the aerosol. So you have them in these very small, contained operatories.
Yep.
They're coming in there, obviously, without their masks on. We're doing dental procedures. Whether or not they're high, you know, aerosol rate, the fact of the matter is they're in there with their mouth open for a lengthy period of time. And then less than 10 minutes later, the next patient is in the room. And we do that for 8 to 10 hours a day.
All right, let's get to your question, Sarah, because we're running out of time. Governor?
Yes, yes. What can we do to better manage that as that is?
Yeah, so Sarah, first of all, hats off to you, and thank you for what you do. I'm way overdue to see my dentist, Bob Sachs, so I want to give him a shout-out. Listen, I'm going to have Judy Persichelli or one of her people follow up with you. I believe we've put out pretty clear guidelines as to how both elective surgery, dental hygiene, and dental procedures generally should be conducted in terms of the parameters, whether it's PPE or, as you rightfully point out, aerosol, and what you're doing about that between customers. But that's something we have to take seriously for obvious reasons, given that line of business you're in. You're in close proximity, hard to wear a mask on the patient side, given what you're doing. So I'm going to have Judy follow up. I believe we've put out pretty stringent guidelines, but I will have her come through and follow up with you, I promise, or one of her team.
Okay. Thank you, Governor. So we had a call of Ivana in Bergenfield who wanted to know what's being done to fix the long lines at the DMV. I know you have fielded this question a few times, but what's the latest update on dealing with the just humongous lines?
And I'm looking at the clock and I have to talk fast.
Yes.
A tsunami of demand at the Motor Vehicles Commission, not unlike the unemployment insurance. Hats off to the team there led by Sue Fulton. They've a 3 to 4 month backlog. They've about halved in 1 month. We know it's not going to get better overnight, but it will get better. They will get through that backlog. If folks are frustrated, I don't blame you.
Okay, thank you, Governor.
Please have patience and treat everybody well, and I want to thank everybody for that patience.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us. You've been listening to Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WHYY and WNYC. I'm Nancy Solomon. Thank you and good night.